Welcome to KMXT's Talk of the Rock, our local community affairs program, where we explore issues and organizations related to our community. Talk of the Rock is hosted by members of the KMXT news team.
Good afternoon, I'm Maggie Wall. Today we're talking about a longtime resident of Kodiak, a longtime art supporter of Kodiak. He actually supported all kinds of projects in town. And as we'll hear in one of these interviews, he, if it was a cause he believed in, he would take it up, whether it was this or that or the other. He didn't care. He wasn't particularly one-sided on a lot of issues. He just cared about what was going on in the community and what was best for the community. And we're talking about Dr. Bob Johnson, who passed away on Friday, January 31st. Dr. Bob was born in 1925, Christmas Day, 1925. He moved to Kodiak in 1938 with his father, who was the first resident doctor here in Kodiak. And we have a little bit more information here. We are going to be listening to several interviews. One we had in the news already earlier in the week, or maybe last week. And then the others I did in the past couple of days with different people who have been involved with Dr. Bob and involved with the Arts Council and things that have happened in town since then. So let's start off talking about Dr. Bob. And we have a report here from Kayla DeRoche, who used to work here at KMXT. She was a reporter and then a news director. And she interviewed Dr. Bob about a photo that she had in front of her. And when Dr. Bob was a kid, remember, he came here as a young boy when his father came here. And that was back in, he came in 1938. So he would have been in the 40s when this photo was taken. I mean, 1940s when the photo was taken. And he and Kayla discuss it and talk about life in the 40s. And then they move on into the war years, when Kodiak was a very prominent location during World War II because there was a big naval air base here and a submarine base, and Japanese submarines and ships often came nearby, and they could hear Tokyo Rose back in those days. So he'll be talking about that just a bit too. So keep that kind of time frame in mind as you listen to this report from KMXT's former news director, Kayla DeRoche.
I sit down at the table with Dr. Bob Johnson and his wife, Marion, in their home. I pull out a copy of an old photograph and slide it over to them. See you, Dr. Bob?
Yep. I think this is he. Isn't this you? Right there, you were always...
Yes, that is I.
You were always taller than anybody.
The black and white photo shows a group of boys waiting in front of a movie theater along a dirt street. Some of the boys wear caps and baggy pants and hang out with their hands in their pockets. One stands on a scooter, another holds onto his bike. There are two posters on the side of the building, one for the 1939 film Cafe Society. Dr. Bob Johnson, in his early teens, stands by the poster, and like his wife says, he's on the tall side. He wears a checkered jacket, and his haircut is a popular style, side-swept and trimmed at the ears. Johnson says he was an usher at that theater for several summers in his teens, and the photo was taken about a year after his family moved to Kodiak. His father was a surgeon. He says the first time his father dropped by Kodiak was on his way back to Portland by ship. He'd been working a summer in the Bristol Bay area.
He came around the point, through the bay, and he saw this beautiful little town in the fall, in a sunny day, one cannery in operation, and fell in love with the place.
Johnson says he, his parents, and their dog moved to Kodiak in 1938. Back then, Alaska was still a territory, and Kodiak a small community in it.
There was a little village in there.
Cottages
scattered around town, up against Pillar Mountain, and out along the shore on both ends.
Johnson says World War II and the naval base in Kodiak changed things in town and in his own life.
From then on, it was a story of the war. And my parents were host and hostess to the military. And my dad was in practice of medicine, of course. And I was a kid in school.
He says blackout drills started as soon as the war did.
All the lights in town were blacked out. All the windows had to have cardboard blackout sheets. And those would go up before light went on. And lights were lit at another village out beyond Kodiak. That would fool the Japanese, huh?
But life continued. Johnson says as a young man, he went exploring with his friends and his dog.
He would keep us informed about bears when they were around the camp, when we were staying overnight, which was fairly common.
He says they hiked all around over to Monashka Bay and up the mountains. He pulls the photo over and points at Pillar Mountain in the background, covered in bushes.
If you will look, there's not a tree on the hill. Not one. Now there's loaded with spruce trees. Take a look up there.
The photo also shows a few stores next to the theater, like Dad's Liquor Store and the Mecca Bar.
That's still here. Actually, bars and churches developed almost in tandem. Same number of each over the years.
He says there was also a pool hall, a hotel, barbershop, and a bank, and a couple of stores, and of course, the theater. If not exploring, Johnson often went to the movies.
It was something we just liked to do all the time, if we could. Yeah. Working there made it really marvelous, because I could see all the movies for nothing.
He especially liked Gary Cooper.
I remember him because he was in quite a few movies with Jane Arthur, and I remember her, too, because she had a husky voice. And Gary Cooper was really something. Tall, quiet, man of few words, very effective as a person.
The current local theater has the same name as the one Johnson frequented, the Orpheum, but a different location. Marion Johnson, the Bronoff Museum's first executive director, says the Orpheum's former building was wrecked in the 1964 earthquake and tsunami. As for Johnson, he ended up practicing medicine with his father and is now retired with his wife in the city of Kodiak. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
And that was a piece out of KMXT's archive, which was produced several years ago by Kayla DeRoche, who was our former news director. Speaking of Dr. Bob, a lot of people think of him as family. He's been in Kodiak, if you've been in town any amount of time, like forever, and has always been here, at least as long as, say, in my case, as long as I've been in Kodiak. Dr. Bob has been a name that I knew of, though I didn't come any direct contact with him until much more recently. Well, okay, in the past 10 or 15 years more recently. A lot of people know Dr. Bob because he delivered them as a baby. He was the doctor in town and then one of the few doctors in town. He also did a lot of philanthropic work and donated countless hours to local civic organizations and nonprofits. I got to know Dr. Bob as a Rotarian. His father was one of the founders of the Noon Rotary, the original Rotary, and then the Rotary had too many and they split into two. So Dr. Bob was in the Noon Rotary, as was I. And he was also very involved in the arts, and that's what we're mostly focusing on today. Up next, I have an interview, a piece that I did with Katie Oliver about Dr. Bob. We ran it earlier, but because it fits in here perfectly, I'm going to run it again. And then we have a little bit of an interview with Steve Richter, who was a guitar player in Dr. Bob's jazz band. Dr. Bob's show played the piano. So those will be our arts bits. And then we'll finish up with an interesting interview with Nancy Kemp and Jenny Shank. And one of the sad things is when people die, it's sad, but at the same time, you get to share memories and you get to share the happy times and things that you know, that bond that you had with them. So we had a lot of giggling and it was a lot of fun. And I hope that you enjoy the rest of this program. Katie Oliver, you are the executive director of the Arts Council. And
correct.
Dr. Bob was a big active part of the arts in Kodiak. Everything. The man seemed like he could do just about everything. And for many, many years, he did do just about everything related to arts, or so it seemed. And so what do you know about Dr. Bob? And what do you know about personally, directly? And then what other people have told you since you've been working at the Arts Council?
Well, Dr. Bob was a true champion of the arts and a true believer in the power of the arts to transform people's lives. He was both a talented musician and a devoted arts patron. I think many people know of his work with The Cry of the Wild Ram, which was an incubator program for the start of the Kodiak Arts Council. He was a fierce advocate for Kodiak's need for a state-of-the-art performing arts facility, which we have, of course, that we now know as the Gerald T. Wilson Auditorium that served our community since 1986. And he was, you know, a leader in many respects in Kodiak, and the arts benefited from his energy and attention.
Is it safe to say that the arts as we know it in Kodiak wouldn't exist if it had not been for him? He was like the driver of so much for so long.
Yeah, he was a founding member of the Arts Council. You know, it's hard to speculate what could have been in his absence, but certainly a lot of what we have we owe to his energy and his championing.
Have you heard, Katie, from anyone? Have they called you, made any comments about what they're thinking right now?
I have had folks come into the office and, you know, reminisce and share stories and make sure that the current staff at the Arts Council know about his role in our origins and in our ability to produce work in the auditorium. So certainly people are coming in and sharing stories and talking about Dr. Bob.
And that was Katie Oliver, who is the current executive director of the Kodiak Arts Council. In just a moment, we'll have an interview with Jenny Shank and Nancy Kemp. Jenny was the person who was community schools during the time that the auditorium was built, and they share some memories of the auditorium project. Next, I want to share a piece, a short bit of an interview I had with Steve Richter, who played guitar in Dr. Bob's jazz band, and Dr. Bob played the piano. Steve loaned me a video, which I was hoping to pull some of that audio out of so that you could hear Dr. Bob's piano, but it just wasn't working. It was at the KI, and then they also performed at the Midnight Sun Festival, or whatever it's called there that we have in the summertime out at the fair. And the audio wasn't good enough to pull, but I have to tell you, last night watching that video, I just thought, oh gosh, that's so Dr. Bob. You know, there he is in that video, and it's really hard when someone dies to see pictures of them. I mean, pictures, I think, for me, pictures are one thing, but to see them in video moving and talking and animated and their expressions on their face, and you just think, oh yeah, that is so Dr. Bob. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to bring you some of that music, but I wanted to share you this bit of information, how Steve, who worked with him as a musician, saw Dr. Bob.
When we started playing out, yeah, we actually had a Kodiak jazz band, turtlenecks and shirts that we produced at some point, and Liz Santoro, J.B. Heineman. I was fairly new at the guitar, well, fairly newish. And we just started playing at the house and decided we could probably play some music out. So we started playing out. We didn't play the KI initially. I believe we played a gig here and there. I know I did Anchor with him. We did a benefit here, at least one.
Here being KMXT.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then at some point, and I don't know, I don't have it all lined up right, but yeah, we played the KI for years and it changed over the years. Liz was playing the upright, and I think before Chris Lisney showed up, I was playing guitar, and JB was playing the flute, because that's what I remember that being like.
What kind of a band leader was he?
He was fine. He had a lot of stuff prepared already. A lot of the music I did not know at the time. It was older jazz, I would guess from his era when he was growing up. It was an older style, a little bit, I don't know, Prohibition era, maybe. And he had a lot of music prepared already that he had printed out. And some of that had his intros that he had ideas on. And those were nailed down, which is kind of standard for jazz. You'll play the head and then you'll go to the center part, which still uses the body of the music. But then you can just improv on that.
Apparently it was fun. You kept doing it.
Oh, yeah. It was a blast. I learned a lot. I'm not a soloist like Chris Lisney is. But I did learn a lot about jazz guitar.
That was Steve Richter, who played guitar with Dr. Bob, and as he said, learned a lot from him. Dr. Bob was always prepared, he said, and I noticed that with Rotary. Dr. Bob was always prepared. He had those programs together and organizing people. And I have this interview coming up. I'm not sure, because we don't have time for the full pieces, that I had to cut it down, okay? And I cut it down to about 28 minutes, and we have 15 minutes left. So I'm not sure if it'll get to the point where Nancy Kemp's going to say that Dr. Bob told her the reason he did the programming and organized all the speakers so that every meeting would have a speaker. And a lot of times there were people from out of town who were just zipping in for something. She said the reason he did that was because that way he got to hear people he wanted to listen to. So he's a very organized man, as Steve was just pointing to with his music, and I can attest to with his Rotary. So here is the interview I did yesterday with Nancy Kemp and Jenny Schenck.
Well, they kind of drafted me to help with the RAM program.
Right.
I mean,
that is Nancy Kemp. And Nancy is the former head of the Arts Council. Her husband, Jerry Wilson, was the original Arts Council director, and the auditorium is named for her husband, Gerald C. Wilson, and we just all called him Jerry. And Jenny Schenck was involved with the arts for many years. She was involved with the school district and ran a dance studio, to give you some perspective.
Well, they kind of drafted me to help with the RAM program.
Right.
I mean, the actual program that was handed out.
Oh, right. The physical.
Yes. And they had meetings every week. And of course, Dr. Bob ran the meetings because he was, as most people considered, the father of the RAM, the Cry of the Wild RAM.
Now, did he write that, or did he saw it and brought
Frank
it in?
Frank Brink.
Oh, right. That's right. I recognize that name. Yes. And then Dr. Bob said, oh, this would be great. Let's do it.
Well, there was a group of people that wanted to get it done, and they'd looked for a place, and they found that was a natural place down there, well, at the RAM site is what it's still referred to, near Abercrombie, because the sound was so good, and the seating was built into the hillside.
Right, and I was typing up something the other day, and I said, the RAM site, and then I tried to explain. The RAM site is where the Cry of the RAM used to be held. And we still have that connection, even though, man, that thing quit running, what, 25 years or more ago? 30 years ago?
Gosh, I don't remember when.
That's Jenny talking.
Yeah,
Jenny.
I don't remember what year it was. But it was more than 20 years ago.
Right, for sure, more than that.
But it ran for about 25 years.
And what it was, for people who don't know, is a play. They call it an outdoor drama, and that's what it was. You went out there, and if it rained, you made sure you brought your rain gear, because we used to rain a lot more in the summer back then, and swat the mosquitoes, and you'd watch. And they'd come up with their kayaks from the shore, and then they had that kind of towery building that was Sitka, and they'd shoot fireworks because that was the big battle at Sitka. It was quite a drama.
Well, it was the history of the Russians coming to Kodiak and then moving to Sitka. And Baranov, of course, was the main character of the play.
And somebody would read parts of it, and then we would go to the next scene and kind of filled in bits and pieces.
Well,
I recall.
Nobody read anything. It was all a regular play. Dr. Bob played Klebnikov, who was kind of the narrator.
That's what I mean, the narrator. Okay, the narrator. Then you were involved with the RAM for how long?
Oh, boy, many years. Because then I married Jerry Wilson, and he played in it as Baranov, and he also directed it.
Right. He was the person that was doing that when I kind of came into the scene in the late 70s.
Yeah, and then things changed in town, and it was hard to get people to commit for the whole summer.
Right, because it went on and on and on. It wasn't just like two nights.
Oh, right. Well, I mean, the practices went on, and the rehearsals were every night.
I think at that stage of the development of the RAM, it was a lifestyle, a summer lifestyle for a lot of people.
Yes, I think so.
It kind of engulfed their whole life because they were out there so much. It was like a big family.
And they met friends that they wouldn't have had otherwise and sang songs. It included dance, Russian dancing, and the balalaika players all got their start there. Mm-hmm. The Russian dancers got their start there.
Right.
It was really a very community effort, big community effort.
I was going to say, big, like a whole community of its own. There were hundreds of people involved in it. It was a massive production.
And the businesses got behind it and contributed. So it was a big community affair.
Yeah, there were also, actually, that's one of the first, I mean, I guess when I first met Dr. Bob and Marion was when we moved here in 74. And we were buying the optometric practice. And they had a farewell dinner for the doctor that we were buying it from, and Marion and Bob were there. So that was the first time that I had met them. And then not too long after that, I joined a service organization called Beta Sigma Phi, which still exists, and went to I don't know if it was an arts council, because I don't think it existed yet, a meeting, and Dr. Bob was there talking about service groups that could get involved with the RAM and by helping do programs and also selling refreshments during the intermission. So that's how I started going to those meetings and met him and got involved with that aspect.
Right. So it was like he kind of ran everything. I mean, he would just like, oh, I need somebody who can draft you along.
You mean for the Cryler Room?
Uh-huh.
Well, Dr. Bob was very community-minded, and when he'd see a need for something, it wasn't just the RAM. He loved the Cry of the Wild RAM, but the Arts Council, he was very instrumental in getting that started and hiring Jerry for the first executive director. He and Mary Holden came to Jerry and said, we have $5,000. Would you be a part-time director? And if you can find more money, you can have it. So that's how the Arts Council kind of got off the ground. But he also got the Kodiak Council on Alcoholism started, and he was instrumental with the Bronoff Museum. Gosh, you look around at the arts and humanities nonprofits, and you'll see Dr. Bob was behind a lot of them.
And I knew Dr. Bob through Rotary, and he was involved with Rotary. His father actually was one of the original founders of Rotary here, my understanding. And Dr. Bob forever would be the, what's that called? The program, right?
Program would director,
make sure we had somebody to speak or something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And when we didn't have a speaker for whatever reason, or if it was a special Rotary occasion, we would sing these Rotary songs. And it's like, okay, Dr. Bob, but we all did it. We all did it. And, I mean, that was, I guess, kind of fun and kind of corny. You've been to those meetings, Nancy. You were there.
Uh-huh.
You had to sing some of those songs. And he just was. I mean, that was just Dr. Bob.
Yes, he was the person that brought in the programs forever, it seemed like. Until maybe the past 5 years when Lindsay took over that job. But I asked him why he did that. That was such a big responsibility. And he said because then he could bring people that he wanted people to hear.
Well,
that made sense.
Absolutely.
That does make sense. I was thinking the Cry of the Wild Ram, tell you the differences. When I was in the Coast Guard, I was young coastie. My first summer here, my friend Linda, who I am still friends with all these years later, they didn't know what to do with the women who came. So, I mean, the first woman to come was still here. And so they had in the barracks, the rooms shared a bathroom. And so they were kind of adjusting to having women around. And so they would only let two women shared the same bathroom, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to kind of juggle the housing or the barracks stuff around. And so they, when I got here, they said, oh, we don't have any place for you. Somebody came we weren't expecting. We have no place for you to sleep. I said, okay. I was young. What the heck? But they put me into what was the old BOQ, Bachelor Officers Quarter, this old rundown old building that was right smack in the middle of the base, and they till they figured out what they were going to do. And so my friend Linda came, and she got to share the bathroom with me. So they were all happy because they got these two women sharing the bathroom. They don't have to deal with us. And so we were getting into Cry of the Wild Ram, and we didn't have vehicles back then. So we used to hitchhike from the base out to the ram, which I don't know. It was a crazy time. We probably were totally naive and foolish, but okay, so we did that. And so we'd go out to the ram, and we only did it for a little while because that was a lot of work to get a ride out there and then get a ride back. And when we were coming back once, and she still remembers it, and I remember it all the time because I see it again and again. We were walking back, right, kind of looking for a hitchhikey ride, and the road wasn't paved, and that's why they call it, joke about the cutoff road, was because that's where the pavement cut off, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we were walking back on the dusty old road. It was, you know, summer, and that there was so much dust in the air, you know, the sky was kind of that orangish color. And we thought, oh my gosh, this is so far, and this is so, I should think we should be out here all by ourselves. We're so out in the middle of nowhere. And it's basically right where Mill Bay Beach is.
Okay.
I mean, that one building was what, Zharoff's house. And I think that was like the only thing in that whole stretch for like miles and miles, it seemed. And we were out there thinking, well, we're just like out in the middle of nowhere. And now every time I go out there and I look, I see all these houses and as things built up. It was so scary because we seemed like we were so far away. But in reality, it wasn't. But back then it was. Because back then you'd say, oh, I don't want to go all the way out to Sears. That's way on the other side of town. And it was like right there where Total Interiors or Kodiak, whatever they call
Talking
it.
Talking about Cry of the Wild Ram, which Dr. Bob Johnson brought to town, and which he had a major part in and ran that show for years and years and years. And it's hard to explain how an adventure it seemed to be, because you would drive all the way out to the state park out at Fort Abercrombie, and then you drive out there, and there was nothing there. So it felt like you were going out on a journey out to the middle of nowhere, kind of changing to another time, another place. And there we were at the ram site. That is why they call it the ram site out there at the state park. There is much more to this interview, and I will post it on our website a little bit later this afternoon so you can listen to the rest of it, especially the part about the auditorium being built and how that all came together. And didn't you just love that part about the beginning of the Arts Council? Here, Dr. Bob, we got $5,000. I mean, here, Jerry Wilson, we got $5,000, said Dr. Bob. Take the job part-time, and if we can come up with more money, we'll give it to you. So a little bit of history on arts and history of Kodiak and history of Dr. Bob's role in the community. Once again, Dr. Bob Johnson passed away on Friday, January 31st. He leaves his wife, Marion, married for nearly 70 years, 4 sons and 8 grandchildren. And I hope that you've enjoyed this special program of Talk of the Rock. And certainly my heart goes out to the Johnson family, to Marion, and the others in the family. It's a very difficult time, but know that people in Kodiak love Dr. Bob, and hearts are reaching out to you at this time. I want to say thanks to Steve Richter, Nancy Kemp, Jenny Shank, Kayla DeRoche, Dr. Bob and Marion in that little piece that Kayla did, and to all the people who suggested names and phone numbers that I called or tried to call and couldn't get through. I appreciate your help. And that's it for this special edition of Talk of the Rock. Up next, we have our afternoon music. You are listening to KMXT Kodiak.